May it please the Court. Nicole Walker on behalf of the appellant Alfonso Quintero. A statement that was illegally obtained from Mr. Quintero by the police was the only evidence to establish his age at trial, which was an essential element of the offense that he was ultimately convicted of, rape in the third degree. Detective Holden arrested Mr. Quintero on the charge of rape third degree based on allegations that he had had sexual intercourse with Elizabeth Casales, who was 15 years old at the time, and that he was at least 10 years older than she was. At trial, Ms. Casales testified that they did indeed have sexual intercourse and that she was 15 at the time. However, she did not know Mr. Quintero's date of birth. In an effort to establish that element of the offense, the state asked Detective Holden to the stand, and she was to testify as to what Mr. Quintero told her his date of birth was during the booking process. Trial counsel for Mr. Quintero actually objected at this point because Mr. Quintero was not given his Miranda rights before she asked this question. The court overruled the objection, and the detective ultimately testified that Quintero told her he was born on October 31st, 1975, making him 29 at the time. As I've already stated, an essential element of the offense was Mr. Quintero's date of birth. He had to, or his age, I should say. And the Detective Holden knew this because she was the one who swore out the warrant. The argument made below, and again advanced by the state above, is that the date of birth fell within the pedigree exception to the Miranda rule. There is a limited pedigree exception to Miranda. However, it cannot be applied in such a way as to undercut the basic tenet of Miranda, which is that whenever a suspect is in custody, police are always required to obtain a waiver of Miranda before asking them any question that is likely to elicit an incriminating response.
You said the detective knew this because she swore out the warrant that this was an element of the offense. Would it make a difference if it was a different booking police officer?
It might, because there's a totality of the circumstances factor analysis that goes into determining whether or not a question is likely to elicit an incriminating response and whether the police officer reasonably knew that it was likely to do so. So depending on the situations, I would imagine another booking officer would also know the elements of the offense. So in that case, the argument would be the same they should have known.
Is there a difference between the phrase you used that question is likely to elicit incriminating information and Muniz, which says the exception does not apply when the officer, quote, seeks to elicit information that may incriminate, close quote. Does Muniz suggest that the officer at the time of asking the question, though it may be as a part of a booking or attendant to booking, does the police officer have to have in his or her mind the desire to elicit information for the purpose of incriminating?
No, Your Honor. In fact, subjective intent has been found by several courts of the police officer to be only one factor to consider. What is more highly relevant is actually the relationship between the question and the crime that is being charged. In fact, in United States versus Mata Abundez, the court stated that in that case they were questioning the defendant about his citizenship, which, similar to a date of birth, would be a basic biographical question. And in that case, the court held that it was the relationship between the question and the crime that was highly relevant. So it does play a role. However, I think it is only one factor to be considered. And it's clear in this case that I don't think there's any dispute that the answer to this question was incriminating, as it was an element of the offense. I think what the issue the court may be concerned about today is the inevitable discovery doctrine and whether or not that saves the state from the inadmissibility of the statement. And that doctrine does not save the inadmissibility of the statement in this case. After Quintero's objection, the state, first of all, did not argue inevitable discovery. The state did not seek to introduce any other evidence of Mr. Quintero's date of birth. Mr. Quintero took the stand, and the state did not ask him his date of birth. Nor did the state attempt to present any other evidence from Detective Holden or anyone else as to what standard procedures were in place where the police would have found this evidence despite, instead of through Quintero's statement.
Well, let me stop you there for a second. Granted, the state didn't do all these other things that it could have done, but isn't that entirely explainable by the fact that the state had already been allowed to introduce the evidence of his age through the police officer's testimony? So, you know, maybe as a belt and suspenders kind of approach, it would have been better if the state also said, well, and we checked with various public records and were able to determine that this is his actual date of birth, or they could have asked him a question when he was on the stand or whatever. But as things stood at the time of trial, that element of the crime had been established. So why does it matter that the state didn't do any more than that for purposes of the current analysis?
Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, the state did not assert an inevitable discovery argument. They were required to do that. So we may not even get to...
But wait a second. Why were they required to do that?
Well, they have the burden to prove by preponderance of the evidence that evidence is admissible, and that's what Nix versus Williams holds.
Right, but they're making that argument now, right?
No.
But we raised it on appeal.
Correct.
We've gone through this with regard to harmless error when the state didn't raise harmless error, and we said we'd like people to file supplemental memos on harmless error. So in this case, the inevitable discovery issue is before this court because this court has asked for supplemental memos on that issue.
Well, Your Honor, that may very well be, but even after supplemental briefing, the state has still failed to make any attempt to make an inevitable discovery argument. So if the court is...
Well, I think that... Let's assume that your position prevails on the merits and that the question should have never been asked. And that precedent goes forward. So the next time something like this occurs, the question is not asked. Then the state is confronted with establishing the defendant's age. And the exercise the state would go through is, well, how can we find the defendant's age? Through testimony or some public document. And in this case, the state, in the supplements to the record, have provided us with proof that they could have found if they had gone through that exercise to establish age. And the question we have for you, based on the supplement to the record that we have in this case, why shouldn't we conclude that the age was inevitably discoverable?
In direct response to that, Your Honor, in Nix versus Williams, the United States Supreme Court adopted the inevitable discovery rule. The court in Nix versus Williams specifically stated that it is the duty of the state to prove by preponderance of the evidence that, in this case, the date of birth ultimately or inevitably would have been discovered. And they have failed to do that here. When I mentioned that they made no further argument in supplemental briefing, if the court is going to entertain the issue and find that it's not waived, they still have a burden here, which they failed to meet. They didn't attempt to meet it below, and they failed to meet it above. In their response, and again in their supplemental briefing, they said, well, the detective could have found this. It was likely she would find this. She just didn't find it. That's not what Nix versus Williams states, and that's not what several other courts have held. What other courts have held is it's got to be more than it was possible. Now, common sense may tell us that it was possible for them to get it, and I realized the difficulty in reconciling that with the law in this case. However, the law is specifically laid out, and it's very clear.
Well, wait a second. I'm having a conceptual problem here because date of birth is really not something you can contest. It is what it is, and if there's a record of it, then you discover those records and you put it into evidence. And since it is an element of the crime, then presumably if the state was going to prosecute this crime, the state was going to determine the defendant's date of birth. Isn't that a whole lot different conceptually from inevitable discovery of perhaps a gun that was in the bushes near the crime scene that you learned about because you interrogated the defendant inappropriately or impermissibly, and he said, oh, yeah, I threw the gun in the bushes, so now you run off and you find the gun, whereas if you had never interrogated him, we can have a debate as to how thorough your investigation would have been as to whether you would have looked in those bushes. Aren't we talking about a very different kind of discovery here than what you're trying to cast this into in terms of the inevitable discovery rule?
No, Your Honor, an element of an offense is element of an offense, and evidence is evidence, whether it's the date of birth, whether it's a gun, whether it's a body, whatever it is, it's evidence. And the state has the burden to prove each and every element beyond reasonable doubt.
Right.
If the state chooses only to rely on one form of proof, they're stuck with that. They didn't introduce documents. There wasn't a judicial notice taken of his date of birth. It simply was not before the jury except through Detective Holden's testimony.
Well, how far do we go with this? You have to prove identification as part of the – you can't ask a name without giving Miranda warnings?
Well, Your Honor, there are cases that, in fact, have said that, that if it links an individual to a specific incriminating file or to a crime and identity is the issue. There's a case in United States versus Perry, I believe, where the INS agent could not determine what the defendant's real name was. He went and looked it up and thought he had found the real name, and he went back to the prison and the booking and said, used the guy's real name and said, hey, Jose, what's up? And the guy turned around and responded, so he got his identification through that. In that case, the court said, you can't do that. That's incriminating his identification. So in some cases, that's
because that was a specific effort to seek an incriminating response as opposed to a booking.
Yes, but, Your Honor, a subjective intent is not the dispositive factor. What's more dispositive is the relationship between the question and the crime, and particularly in a case like this where the officer swore out the warrant. There are other charges she could have obviously charged him with where that was an essential element. So she knew going into it that was an element. It wasn't just somebody handed her a piece of paper and said, hey, book him on this charge. She knew what the element of the offense was, and she asked him that. So to some degree, there could be some question as to her subjective intent in that case. We don't know from the record. We also don't know.
But you also need to know in a booking process, because there are many people with the same name, a date of birth so that you can get an arrest record for bail purposes and to determine other issues of identification just through the process of arresting someone.
Well, then, I would state that if that's the only way that the state could have gotten that evidence, then that undercuts their argument that they would have gotten it some other way. If they really needed the date of birth and they really could have discovered it some other way, you believe that's what they would have done. They did not do that. And they have not presented any evidence on the record as to what the routine procedures were that would have allowed them to have inevitably discovered it some other way.
Now, well, my inquiry goes, how do we determine the list of cases where you cannot do routine booking questions without a Miranda warning?
It's not a bright-line test. It depends on the facts of each case. It depends on the nature of the crime. It depends on the defendant's state of mind, everything that normally goes into it. It depends on the defendant's perception. In reviewing all these other cases, besides citizenship, there are no other cases that are this specific. It's an element of the offense. It's not just a name that links you to something. It's not just, in the one case, what drug case, what do you do for a living? The guy smiles and says, I'm in sales. Those are some incriminating information, but not as direct as this. This is akin to them asking him, did you have sexual intercourse? That's another essential element of the offense. And the court would essentially be saying that that is okay. It's okay to ask him an essential element of the offense if it's under the guise of booking.
I don't follow that, because what rational person would think that had anything to do with booking?
excuse me.
We know from the cases what booking information is all about. In this case, it happens to coincide with an element of an offense, and you clearly pointed that out.
Right.
And I'm not sure I understand your analogy to if you had sexual intercourse.
Well, I think what Pennsylvania versus Muniz points out in the United States Supreme Court is the state cannot use the talisman. It was booking, therefore we're allowed to ask it. Just because it was done during booking it does not allow them a blanket permission to ask them a question that is booking and that is also incriminatory. Any question likely to evoke an incriminating response, no matter when it is asked, as long as the defendant is in custody, requires Miranda. So the state here cannot just simply state, well, we need date of birth for booking, therefore we can ask an essential element of the offense.
Could the state have asked, that is, the booking officer have asked the defendant to produce his driver's license?
I think that would be, it's a question as to whether that's testimonial. I think that would be a separate issue as to if that had happened, it would not be considered testimonial, but that's not what happened here. So I don't think that would have been.
Well, required. I mean, if that were permitted as part of a booking, the license would show the date of birth on its face.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand, and that does seem a bit disconcerting, but it is not testimonial, so that is a different category. It may not, it may not justify itself with what the Supreme Court has held, but that's what it's held. And I think if the concern here is if the state is allowed to do it this time, then they can find all kinds of things that are important to booking that they can ask. And, in fact, other police in other jurisdictions have done that. They've put on a form, are you a drug user? And, in fact, that was used against an individual who was charged with sales of drugs. So that would open Pandora's box and allow them to ask many more questions during booking. In Jones versus State, this court addressed a different issue before the court. However, one thing that this court did do was it prevented the state from using inevitable discovery to justify finding drugs after resisting an illegal arrest. And this court held in that case that we want to prevent abuses by the state. Now, this case deals with different abuses by the state. This case, if the state is to be believed, there were several opportunities for them to prove their case as they're required to do, and they didn't do that here.
I noticed that you used in your brief the phrase likely to elicit incriminating responses, but it's not a quote from these. And I have a quote from Innes that says, the police may not ask questions even during booking that are designed to elicit incriminating answers. I'm having difficulty understanding whether the rule is the question that's a routine booking question, coincidentally in this case, turns out to be to elicit an incriminating answer. Is that the same thing as asking a question that's designed to elicit an incriminating answer? And should we be focused on that?
No.
There's little question that your age or your date of birth is a routine booking question.
Right.
Yeah. If Meniz says you can't ask one that's designed to elicit incriminating information, are we simply trapped by the coincidence that the officer who asked the booking information was the officer who prepared a warrant that used the answer to one of the booking questions to fulfill the requirement of meeting an essential element, and that it simply had been a different officer who asked the question but didn't draft the warrant, and the other officer just overheard the answer when it was given? I mean, I'm not trying to make a more tangled web of what seems to be a simple fact situation, but likely to elicit and seeks to elicit information seem to be very different focuses for us.
Your Honor, that is correct. There is language that's kind of fuzzy with respect to that, but I will say in Rhode Island versus Innes, and I believe in Pennsylvania versus Munez, but I don't have that right in front of me, the court did, in fact, say that the officer's the officer's intent is not what dictates it, and that goes to whether it's designed or whether it's likely. So if we look at the officer's intent, that I'm going to ask him this so I can establish this element, what Rhode Island versus Innes stated was you know, that doesn't determine it. We also have to look at the defendant's perception, and we also have to look at the relationship between the question and the answer.
Did this officer have any discretion regarding booking questions, or aren't there just routine questions that must be asked? He or she has to fill in the box every time.
Well, excuse me, I don't know what their written procedures say, but I'm sure that they have routine information that they have to receive. I don't know that they have to ask a specific question to get that information. So I don't dispute that a routine piece of information they needed was a date of birth. The question here is whether she should have asked him that without Miranda. We're not saying that she could never ask him that question. She was required to give him Miranda first. So that's, you know, that doesn't cut him off from being able to get that information from him. Thank you.
Good afternoon, if it pleases the court. Mr. Sklod, in prosecuting this case, got that information out, I think, in the simplest way possible. Yes, he could have gone through records, and those are supplied with the state's answering brief. Yes, he did have not actually a motor vehicle license, as I suggested in the footnote in my opening brief, but he was arrested in 03 for driving without a license, and routinely Division of Motor Vehicle then gave him a record, a number for record-keeping purposes. So that was available. Of course, his Delta's record and his NCI record were available, giving those dates to his date of birth. And considering the fact that the detective, when she went and made the arrest, had a warrant for his arrest, presumably she went through those steps even before the arrest was made, and so she knew that. However, the simplest way to get the information before the jury was simply to ask her, what did he say during booking questions? That way we wouldn't have to worry about 404B. We wouldn't have to worry about blanking out records. The jury wondering, there's a computer record there. I wonder what's on it, that kind of thing. And so Mr. Sklod did this. The judge, there was an objection from Mr. Hurley. We stated it was a routine booking question. The court said, yes, I have. Now, I'm familiar with that issue, and certainly date of birth is a routine booking question. I will allow it, and that was the end of the issue.
Is it correct that I understand you correctly that the officer who asked the booking question that's in issue here, before she asked the question, already had a warrant for his arrest for this charge that incorporated as an element his age?
She had the warrant when she made the arrest. She had a warrant. She did not make an arrest and then get a warrant. She actually had a warrant issued by a magistrate.
And it included the charge that we were...
Yes, for this. This was the only charge there was when she arrested him, for this. So
technically, the answer given at booking wasn't used for the purpose of drafting a warrant...
No.
...accusing him of having sex with someone under...
No, she had the warrant.
...under 16 when he was 29.
No, the question during booking was to simply confirm that he was the right person.
Right.
Again, with Mr. Quintero, who was not a citizen, really the only information she should get from him that's going to hook him with anything else is going to be name and date of birth. And then, of course, she could take the fingerprints and send them to the FBI, which is what they use to make the connection, and that will be done. But name and date of birth is the only thing she had to make the connection, make sure this is the right Quintero, Alfonso Quintero. And, of course, name and date of birth are about as basic.
I don't understand your explanation. You said she wanted to confirm she had the right person, and his date of birth would help her confirm she had the right person?
Sure, yes. That's about all she could get from him. I mean, his name and date of birth, he doesn't have a Social Security number.
And what was she confirming it against?
Against what the knowledge she had, which I'd assume when she, well, I should back up a little bit. I mean, the way this all got started was that Ms. Casales went to the Division of Health and Social Services to apply for benefits. They asked her some information about the child with the father. Then they put two and two together, Health and Social Services contacted the police to conduct an investigation. Apparently, Detective Holden then ran what information she had and found out the date of birth. Yes, confirmed that, in fact, there was that age differential that was illegal. that he was, I believe, 28 and she was 14, I think, at the time she got pregnant. And then got the warrant and went and made the arrest, and that was
so, it. Now, okay. Stop right there so I don't get confused. Are you suggesting that the officer had a piece of paper or some type of knowledge of his date of birth before the arrest warrant was issued?
Certainly. She wouldn't be able to fill out the probable cause sheet otherwise.
And where would,
now,
we,
it could.
Where would we find that in the record?
Well, she wasn't asked about the investigation. She would just say, did you have a warrant? Yes, I did. Did you go make the arrest? Yes, I did.
But you're stating this unequivocally, and it seems to be important, because if the officer had independent knowledge of his date of birth before she got the arrest warrant, then asking him his date of birth later on might not have the same significance.
Well, I think she still has to ask it as a routine booking question. I don't think it changes that at all, whether she had the warrant before or whether she used his information to get the warrant. Now, this court in the Herring case cited by the defendant and attached to the defendant's brief, the police used a booking question address to go get the search warrant, and then this court said that was all right. In this case, the police officer got the, I'm assuming, I haven't seen the warrant, but she had to fill out a probable cause sheet and convince a neutral and detached magistrate that there was this age differential between the victim and the defendant. She may have got that information straight from Health and Social Services who did that, or she may have got it herself. Or
it may have been a little more imprecise because of the wide difference in ages.
Could very well have been. I realize on direct examination, Ms. Gonzalez was asked if she knew how old the defendant was, and she said no. But maybe when she went to Health and Social Services, applied for benefits, she had better memory of that. Again, it is the most routine of routine booking questions, name and date of birth, and I think the officer would be certainly derelict if she didn't go through those routine booking questions, whether she...
Well, how do you apply the language designed to invoke a response? If you look at the charge, and the charge includes as an element a 10-year age differential, and we assume that to the extent the routine booking questions are not allowed, if they would... provoke an incriminating response, which suggests that you need to modify them, wouldn't this be the classic case where you'd say, well, while I would normally ask the age, this is one of those situations where I can't ask the age because once I get a 10-year differential, I've got an element of the offense.
Actually, I believe I disagree with the court characterization. I believe the law on this is you cannot use as an excuse, the routine booking questions. This is what we always ask on routine booking. You can't just get anything in. So in Muniz, for example, obviously it's not a routine booking question to ask a defendant, what was the date of your sixth birthday? I mean, that was a DUI suspect. That's meant to confuse him. That's meant to test it. It's just a little test to see how drunk he really is. We couldn't even, add to his year of birth six and come up with an answer. That's not a routine booking question. Once you get outside of the basics like name and name, address, date of birth, and start asking these more unusual questions, then you simply can't say, we always ask those kinds of questions. Now, what's routine or not is, of course, going to depend, going to change. Anymore, I noticed that the defendant, not being an American citizen, the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations is going to come into play. And so a routine booking question when an officer has suspects that an arrestee is not an American citizen may include, are you an American citizen? Whereas, say, 20 years ago, that would seem to be outside the scope of routine questioning. So that may change in time, but certainly there are certain basic questions that are always routine, whether they turn out to be incriminating or not. Certainly in a case of hindering prosecution or forgery, asking routine booking questions, that's going to be the elements of the offense if the arrestee gives a false name and a false address. This is the crime coming out during routine booking. So again, our position on on appeal is simply that this was a routine booking question. Now, as far as inevitable discovery, again, I pointed out that, and I supplied the records supplementally, that his date of birth was certainly available to the officer, and I'm sure the officer ran his records, apparently even before she made the arrest, because she had a warrant. But as far as when this is brought up, no, there was certainly no reason to bring up inevitable discovery.
So the issue was waived?
I'm sorry?
So that argument was waived?
No. On appeal, I suppose I could say that for the most part, as long as, say, evidence was correctly admitted, the reason for admitting it may be incorrect, may have been wrong, but as long as the evidence was admitted correctly for whatever reason, there is simply no cause to reverse a conviction and send it back to go through the same kind of to just go through the motions again and for a different reason. So no, the argument is not waived. I mean, I routinely, in any event, kind of paragraph at the end of an argument.
But shouldn't that issue? I mean, there can be factual issues surrounding inevitable discovery arguments that the trial court should be addressing.
Absolutely, I cannot agree more. But in this case, Mr. Sklut had absolutely no reason, and simply, I'm sure the trial judge would have told him, look, I've made my decision, let's move along, had he come up with the inevitable discovery argument also. But the argument he made was, of course, the primary one. This was a routine booking question, which the trial judge agreed, and the trial judge agreed that it was, and was admissible for that reason. No reason for Mr. Sklut at trial to then, come up with a bunch of backup arguments, including, if it is incorrectly admitted, it's harmless error anyhow, or something like that. Certainly, the position on appeal is a little bit different.
Well, let's try to extend the application of the rule. The First Circuit, in a case called Reyes, said if you ask the age, where age is an element of the offense, then you should give the Miranda warnings first. So there are a lot of other crimes besides this one where age would be an element of the offense. Is it your position that you can just always ask age?
You can certainly always ask date of birth. Now, I don't know. Do you know how old are you for underage drinking or something like that? It's my position that you can always ask the basic ones, even though they are. So name and date of birth and address are going to be certainly the three basic ones that are always going to come in.
If the charge, just stay with a simple hypothetical, the charge is underage drinking, and you know that's the charge, and that's the purpose of being booked, it's your position that you can still say, what's your date of birth?
Yes, it is.
And that's not a problem.
That is not a problem. Name, address, date of birth, those are the three most basic booking questions that I can think of. Certainly there are others, but those three are always going to be asked, and always should be asked. Again, the police have a duty, certainly, to make sure that they are arresting the right person. This is a way of doing that.
Are there any cases that support that position, that when it's an age-related offense, for example, underage drinking, that routine booking?
I have not found a case where a name or date of birth was found to be outside the range of a routine booking question that wouldn't fall under the routine booking question exception. It's always questions that vary from what one would think of as routine booking. Who's the car registered to? Maybe not. Again, Muniz, what's the date of your sixth birthday?
Was there a separate custodial interrogation here?
I'm sorry?
Was there a separate custodial interrogation from the booking?
No, the officer asked him at the time she went, do you know I'm here? He said, yeah, something about I got the girl pregnant. And he went off with him. That was it. All right. That he got her pregnant really was not disputed. If the court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to address the Chief Justice's concerns with respect to Pennsylvania versus Muniz. At 110 Supreme Court 2650, the court cites Rhode Island versus Innis favorably with respect to what functional equivalent of questioning, custodial interrogation, and it stated that it's any words or actions on the part of the police officer. And it does say, other than those normally attendant to arrest and custody that police should know are reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response from the suspect. The latter portion of the definition focuses primarily upon the perceptions of the suspect rather than the intent of the police. So it does cite Rhode Island versus Innis favorably with respect to, it may be attendant to booking, however, the intent of the defendant is essential. I do think there are other cases where the courts have held that it is the state cannot rely on the pedigree exception to say, it was part of booking. And Doe and Vasquez, they asked citizenship questions, which arguably would also be normally attendant to booking, similar to date of birth. It's not out there like the date of your sixth birthday, et cetera. And in those cases, the court held that they should not have been asked.
The state has maintained, and they cite Appendix 28 for the proposition that the police officer who asked the date of birth as a booking question already had a warrant and used the warrant as the vehicle for arrest.
Mm-hmm.
So do you agree that the warrant or any paperwork associated with obtaining the warrant would have required the police officer to already know the age or date of birth of the defendant? So at the time she asked the booking question, she would already have known the answer?
I believe the warrant did have a date of birth in there, but I again state that this was not entered into evidence. So,
I understand that, but I'm trying to determine in my own mind what the test is for determining the totality of the circumstances and where the emphasis should be on why the question is asked at booking. Is it a matter of routine, or is there another design involved, or is it just any questions reasonably likely to elicit incriminating information? But what if you already have that information? Does that make a difference?
Well, I think it does focus factor into the analysis that she did know the answer to that. Why did she need to ask that again? So I think that would actually cut in favor of the fact that it was inadmissible. Because she did not need to ask him that question if she did, in fact, have that information already. The other thing that we also need to take into consideration here, Mr. Donovan has come up here and offered the court a lot of assumptions as to what the officer could have done, would have done, might have done, but we don't have any evidence in the record of what was done, what would have been done, and I think that's essential. And I think another essential thing that has been overlooked is that the two pieces – I think he offered three pieces of evidence with dates of birth on it. There was two that were that did not match up. Now, admittedly, they both would have put him over 10 years older, but that was something that the state may have consciously made a decision not to use that as evidence because they would have had questions with respect to reliability, et cetera. So to say that it would have discovered it otherwise, therefore, that's okay, I think is belied by that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.